one of the most powerful things that any human being can do. And I think it really is the mark of a gospel revolutionary. And that is to wake up in the morning and start your day, not just with a fresh cup of coffee, but start your day by saying to yourself and finding something where you can say, I am going to change my mind about something today, even if it's only for today. I am changing my mind.
Grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, November 10, 2017. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello, Don Bartlett. I am doing excellent today. Beautiful day here in Palm Beach Gardens. Wintertime is just fantastic in South Florida. So, yeah, it's a good day.
It's 70 degrees and it's wintertime for you. Right.
Well, it's 70 degrees would be wintertime. That we'll get 70 degrees way later in this year, like January and February, we'll get 70. We're not down that low. I would be looking for a place to move if we were down that low.
Yeah, we'd be doing this from Mexico, I guess.
So, yeah, it's a good day here. How's your day?
Fantastic. Last night I got back from Kentucky. It was wonderful driving, except going up there. Coming back was wonderful. You know, I drove from northern Alabama to over the Kentucky border on the taillights of one truck.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I knew that he could see better than I could.
So you had bad visibility.
Fog all the way.
Oh, no.
But what days? When you have fog during the night, or you wake up to fog, you know the day is going to be pretty nice, and that's how it was. So had a great time up there, mate. Back home again now.
Welcome home.
Thank you. It's not 70 degrees, though, at night.
Gospel Revolution.
We're just going to dive straight in again this week because we've got a lot to get through, including some stuff that perhaps is a carryover from last week. Mm-hmm. We're going to start straight in from Helen. This was tagged in the comment section of last week's podcast on www.gospelrevolution.com, and it said, one question for you: what happened to Jesus' earthly body?
The only thing I know is what it saith, and I knoweth no more.
And what saith it?
Well, we see that Jesus's earthly body was transformed into a spiritual body. The physical body became obviously something that did not have limitations of a physical body, but there was no physical body left in the grave. That body rose from the dead, and we see stories then taking place, like of Thomas saying that he doesn't believe, and Jesus saying, thrust your hand here in my side and my and the nail prints in my hands. We see Jesus appearing and disappearing. So that's all the information I've got. Do you have any more information on that?
Well, like you say, there was a body that disappeared, allegedly, up into the clouds. And there was another body that got hung on a cross. Somewhere between the two, something happened to that body, because in the story you just brought up, Thomas saw him walk through a wall.
Yes.
He walked through walls is not normal. This would be the headline on the 6 o'clock news if it happened today.
Yeah, that's not a physical body anymore if you walk through a wall.
Not physical as we know it. So, yes, he had a transformed body, no question about it. In fact, at one stage he said to one of his followers, "Don't touch me, for I have not yet risen, gone to my Father who's in heaven." After that, he says to Thomas, "So, touch me."
Yeah.
So this something happened somewhere along the line that that changed his body. Now, another thought is, Helen, that recently, well, when I say recently, in the last 20 or 30 years, somebody found a bone of Buddha. Oh, it was celebrated. Here's a bone of Buddha. No one's found a bone of Jesus. And you can be pretty darn sure. Now, you remember in the Middle Ages, they used to sell off all kinds of artifacts claiming that they were real. This is a part of the cross. This is a part of, I mean, there were so many billions of bits spread around the planet as being holy artifacts that it would have to have been an elephant to have been enough parts. But no one's found a bone of Jesus. Now, this is not a conclusive argument for me, but it is rather interesting to observe. So no one's found any of Jesus' remains. This has prompted some people to say that Jesus was a myth. That's almost impossible. In fact, most atheists and Bible scholars now agree, and we're talking about scholars, people who know what they're talking about, agree that Jesus was an historical figure. So there's no, there used to be a lot of disagreement about that in the late 1800s, early 1900s, but now there's pretty much pure agreement. So Jesus lived, he was an historical figure. He went up to do things like fly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't go up into the clouds unless you can fly. And I haven't seen too many humans fly. So something happened. He had a transformed body. What happened to his physical body? It got transformed is the nearest thing I think that we can actually say to that, Helen. And thank you for your question.
Yes, absolutely. And we also see Jesus doing things before his transformed body that weren't really human, like walking on water.
You've just had to spoil that for me, didn't you?
We just had to, yeah.
No, that's true.
Throw a wrench into the system. He also went through a transformation at the Mount of Transfiguration.
Do we know what that transformation was?
We don't know what it was, but we know it caused the appearance of people who had been long gone to take place, according to the story. So it's not just what happened to Jesus' body after the crucifixion. It's, man, Jesus' body went through a whole lot of things, you know, that defied natural law. That is for sure.
Thank you, Helen. Here we hear from Sean Anson Smith. Or should I say Sergeant Sean Anson Smith? Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank Gospel Revolution for what you all do. I'm thankful for Mike, but I want to make a special mention of Don Bartlett, Don Barris Bartlett. I sat in with him during the first edit and mix of an entire GR show. Raw editing a sound recording is anything but glamorous and exciting. It takes a good 13 hours or more to edit an hour and a half broadcast. I want to thank Don for his very hard work to bring us listeners a good broadcast. I think I might just increase my donation just because of the tedious work that goes into producing a broadcast of folks like listening to. That's worth something, at least to me. Anyway, please consider, this is to you, family. He's saying, please consider a donation or increasing your current donation as a gratuity for the hard work that goes into taking good news across the globe. Sean Smith, dung-slinging love monkey.
That's our Sean, and we are very proud to claim him. And I just noticed that his initials are SAS, SAS.
Yep, yep.
So,
and of course, the SAS.
Apropos,
would,
yeah.
The SAS would always say they were better than the Green Berets or the Marines anyway, so I don't know what that means, Sean.
Yeah, he's definitely got some sass to him, that's for sure.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, yes, and believe it or not, He was asking me a bit about the production of the show, and we'll one day we'll do another show about how we produce the show. But I do about 3 hours preparation, something between 12 and a couple more hours in editing, at least that. You know, I might start at 3 and end at 3 in the afternoon. And getting up at 3 is no big deal. That's just the way my body works. But I do spend something like 15 plus hours producing one of these podcasts. And it's not actually a sacrifice, to be honest. It's more of an enjoyable process. Some parts of it are sacrificial in as much as I hate doing them. But most of the parts I really enjoy. I like patching in the music bits, and I like putting the bumpers in there and everything else and everybody's questions. And I enjoy doing that. But I was really surprised when Sean Smith sat in with me, because Sean is producing his own podcast for both Java Joe and for Slung Dung. Slungdung.com, I think it is, and Java Joe is a group on Facebook. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to actually produce shows where loving kindness, he would call it, or I would call it love, is the main focus of the show. And he's trying to do it with humor or with cooking and so forth. So if you'd like to support somebody who supports us, have a look at those two sites, one on Facebook, one on the internet. And he sat in, Mike, for, he spent at least 12 hours with me in one day editing last week's show. And he suddenly saw, he saw stuff that he'd seen before, because he's edited, produced his own podcast before, but he saw some new stuff, I'm pretty sure. And I'm learning from him. He's learning from me. He sent me some of his old equipment. And I'm now the proud possessor of two Macs, thanks to Sean Smith.
Oh, wow.
And I'm changing up the way I'm producing this show because of his involvement. So, family, if you'd like to get a good mention on our show, send me your car, your wife, your recording stuff, anything
you
want.
You got enough wife, so.
oh, boy. Thank you, Sean. Now, we've got a treat for you, family. We've been talking about it for a month, but we had some hiccups, speed bumps, and wrinkles. But now the videos, there's several of them, Faith of God, are up on the web. They're up in our YouTube channel, which is Gospel Revolution 1, the number one. So Gospel Revolution followed by the digit 1. And you will find them all up there. You can see them, or you can just simply go to the website, look for videos, look for the latest videos, and there they are there too.
I flew to Michigan to do these. So the reason that I committed to flying up there and staying the time that it took to do them was because I knew that the person who was going to be doing them would do them with excellency. That, you know, you can record a video sitting at your computer. Obvious, but Randy really wanted to produce some good, high-quality videos. We've had to, I think we had to dummy them down just a little bit to fit them into any workable program, but still they are far above any quality that we would have been able to do on our own, for sure. So, there was just a stride that I hit in doing these videos. It just became very comfortable, and not only comfortable, but, you know, as I was sharing these, there were thoughts coming to me that I had not expressed before. I don't know that I never had the thoughts before, but I do know that there was some of the things that came out in those videos that I have never expressed before and possibly never even thought before. So be sure and enjoy those. And we want to thank Randy French for his efforts. They have been he's been relentless in trying his best to help this gospel and me look and sound as good as we possibly can, and probably look better than I possibly can. So we appreciate it, Randy, so much.
Yeah, I echo that. Randy has been relentless.
But it's also just the CPR of the gospel. Folks, this works. I don't know of anything else that I would encourage you to do religiously. and that is listen religiously, because it does nurture the soul. We have people that deal with all kinds of different situations, whether it is dealing with finances or family or stress situations. We have people that deal with depression that listen, and they report to me that this works every single time. That if they are down and they got a case of the blues, they go listen to the Gospel Revolution. They pull something out and listen to it, and they say, they tell me that without question. Now, I can attest to that also. Now, you'd say, well, Mike, you know all this. It's not in the knowing of it that helps the soul. It the knowing of it causes you to think differently. But the hearing of it is just such a cleansing process that I can't deny. It is an experience. It's a wonderful thing to allow the gospel to do its work.
So, having said that, I don't know whether to share this secret or not, but what the heck, I'm just going to say it, and you can cut me down like so much old wood if you want, mate. And that's what I am. I'm old wood.
Old wood, ready for the fire.
Thank you for saving me there. Your new books are going to be coming out soon, which are verse by verse exposés of the book of Galatians and the book of Hebrews.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, this has been a work in process for so long, and our precious friend Victor Brennan yep. has done the preparation. These are taken directly from Mike's teachings on Galatians and Hebrews, and they are a verse-by-verse exposition in context of those two books.
Mm-hmm.
Editing is a tiresome and a long process. It's a painstaking process, as Jeff Robertson will tell you, and we need to have a number of minds, and many minds, so to speak, comparing notes on this. But we will be going forward with the editing of these books, and Vic just got them to us this week, and I'm just stoked, mate. We will have these available, I would say, early next year. They'll be looking closer at the light of day, but we just wanted to share our exciting news with you.
Yes, we sure do. We like to keep you informed as much as we are informed. So I think one thing that people can see just from what we've done so far in the PowerCast is we got a lot of people doing a lot of stuff. It's just amazing. I loved having Marcel Ross in his beautiful accent explaining to people about the 24-hour radio. I hope we get that on more.
Hi, this is Marcel Ross from the Netherlands, and I am...
I know. I loved it.
Hi, I am Marcel Roos, coming to you from Bouwsteen in Holland, where I maintain the Gospel Revolution radio service. If you need a fast injection of the Gospel CPR, that is the consistent, persistent, and repetitive joy of the Gospel, then tune in to the Gospel Revolution Radio, playing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. To listen, go to gospelrevolution.com, and under audio, at the top of the page, simply click on GR Radio 24/7.
Yeah, we need to play that often, but we've got more people coming on board just continually offering to do things that we really need help with, and we appreciate it.
Mike Turi is, and I think somebody else, but Mike Turi is being an invaluable source of encouragement to Randy French in editing his new book. We had a number of people that came on board, thanks to Jeff Robertson, to edit your book. And right now, family, if you would like to be part of editing a book, let us know. Please tell us, because we need your help with these two books, Galatians and Hebrews. And there'd be no such thing as too many volunteers, because I know that Randy French is also looking for whatever help he can get. So, family, it's easy giving us money.
Mm-hmm. And we don't decry anyone giving us money. We need your money. We want your money. We're eager for your money. We are covetous for your money. But, I mean, if you've got a car, if you've got a somebody gave us a house. Now, they didn't just give it to us. They have given it to us in their will. But anything that you have that you think that could be beneficial to the gospel revolution, and that means to us paying our bills to get the gospel out around the world, Southeast Asia, Kenya, and now Ethiopia. Don't think any little bit's too small. I gave away three libraries, probably of 600, 700 books each time. Had I thought about it, I would have probably sold them on eBay and given the cash to somebody that needed the cash. You can do the same. And anything you can do to help us, believe me, we will be so grateful for it.
Absolutely.
Praise the Lord and send me the money. I'm so happy. You can be happy too. If you praise the Lord and send me the money, that's what Jesus wants you to do. Praise the Lord, I'm sending the money.
All they care about is getting money, 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 money.
This week from the Gospel Revolution Private Group, Michael, we heard from Pep Washburn. He said this: the divine indwelling has been there from the beginning and has never been earned by any behavior whatsoever or any ritual, but only recognized and realized and fallen in love with.
Mm-hmm. Got away with words, doesn't he?
Dang. Yeah, I would have just said something simple like, you know, the truth is in your heart.
Yeah.
You're gonna see it and hear it and then you're gonna love it. But no, he has to be much better than any of us in the way he puts words together.
He's like the FTD florist man, you know. You don't know what you're getting, but boy, when it arrives at the door, you realize how nice it is.
I have no idea what the FTD florist man is, but I get the picture. It's like going on one of those mystery flights when you get cheap flights to go places. Where will I end up? Will I end up in Baja California, or will I end up in New York? So he says, in those moments when the mystery and majesty of your own humanity, of all humanity, of the divine presence in the sweep of creation becomes obvious, in those moments, gratitude, amazement, and compassion flow effortlessly from the core of our being. Our consciousness rises to the realization that the boundless mystery of existence is answered simply with one word, love. Gosh, I actually turned myself on just reading that, like, oh man, that is good.
Oh, it is good. I'm telling you, the talent that we have in the Gospel Revolution is just off the charts. I think one of the things that causes the Gospel Revolution to be so fresh and so new for all of us every day is that we have accomplished what seems like around the world the impossible. And here it is. I can't say it as well as Pep does, but here it is. We have achieved the ability to, drumroll please, change our minds. You know, everybody talks about what to do when you first get up in the morning. I've decided to do something with my life. I've decided that every morning that I get up, I am deliberately deciding to change my mind about something. And I'm going to change my mind about something, even if it's only for the day, just to see what it's like to think differently. It is a good way to exercise the flexibility of your mind. Change your mind at least for today. Whatever your opinion is about something, try on a different opinion and see what that is like.
You know, you just reminded me, Mike, that Aristotle, who is considered to be one of the founding fathers of modern logic, said this: it is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it.
Mm.
If ever there was a place where you saw that this was most needed, it'd be Facebook, honestly.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Our polarity, both political and religious, is just, man, it's off the charts. But to be able to form in your own mind, for even if it was only a day, a different way of looking at something. Dang, I like that.
One of the most powerful things that any human being can do, and I think it really is the mark of a gospel revolutionary, and that is to wake up in the morning and start your day, not just with a fresh cup of coffee, but start your day by saying to yourself and finding something where you can say, I am going to change my mind about something today, even if it's only for today. I am changing my mind. Thank goodness Aristotle showed us this as a logical way of thinking, because I think that's the way gospel revolutionaries think. It's amazing how non-offended they are at other people's views.
Well, one thing we all know is that it's happened to us, so it could happen again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And for the sake of being able to even know what you think, maybe you ought to think the way somebody else thinks for a day just to try it on for size. You might be surprised. We have been taught so much in the Christian community to be afraid of thoughts, to battle thoughts, to reject thoughts, to condemn thoughts, to rebuke thoughts.
Oh, if you think that thought, you're giving the devil.
Oh, the devil's got a foothold. The battle is for the mind. I got so sick of that stupid teaching about the battle being for the mind, and you got to run off every thought. This battle for the mind, goodness gracious, folks, thoughts come and thoughts go. I'm glad to find out that my mind can think about anything, and that what runs through my mind is not a definition of who I am.
What you think is not who you are. Is that like you are not the worst thing you have ever done?
I'm not the worst thing I ever thought, that's for sure. We allow ourselves to be defined by thoughts. We get so condemned, so guilty, and so judgmental. I have judgmental thoughts go through my head. It doesn't mean I'm going to carry them out.
I know that you do, because you've told me that you want to.
Oh, the things I would do to you. Folks, don't buy into this horrible thing of fighting with your brain anymore. My goodness.
So you're training your mind to use different presuppositions to explore the possibilities of different conclusions. Have I got that right?
Yeah, and I think that it will not only do that, even if it doesn't change my mind about it in the long term, the one thing that I hope that it will do is give me greater ability to hear people out who think things that I do not agree with. Now, we already do that fairly well throughout the gospel revolution, but I think the more open we are to hear somebody out without feeling threatened as to where we happen to be, the better. Because the thing that we've all experienced is that we have changed our minds. And we know what it's like for those around us to be intolerant of that mind change. So I think it's a good thing. Wake up every morning and decide to change your mind about something.
All right. Just don't change your minds about a family about giving us money.
Oh, yes, they should. They need to change their minds and give more.
Just change your minds about giving us money.
Exactly.
Okay. In the news of the world this week, and we spell world WHIRLED, in news of the world this week, we heard from Germa. Thank you, Germa, in the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution Facebook group. We heard about a Christian writer being banned from Liberty University. Just remember the name of this freaking university. After criticizing a Trump ally. So, Trump refers to President Trump. Gosh, even I know to call a man by his title. And I looked up the story because it was just too delicious to evade. And what happened? But we found this story. According to NPR, this is an NPR story around the nation. Christian writer banned from Liberty University campus after criticizing an ally of President Trump. Now, I wouldn't care if it was President JFK. I wouldn't care if it was President Obama. I wouldn't care if it was President Trump. That has got nothing to do with this story. So please take the politics and just put them to one side for a minute. Firstly, Liberty University. Well, one would think that means freedom. And I'm going to read you the whole story. It's a little long, but the last paragraph kind of pretty much sums it up. An evangelical Christian writer and pastor says he's been banned from the Liberty University's campus for criticizing President Jerry Falwell Jr., a longtime ally. I'm guessing he's president. He was never president of the USA. I'm guessing he's president of the Liberty University, a longtime ally of President Donald Trump. The writer Jonathan Martin said in a Twitter feed that he was on the campus of Liberty, a private Christian college in Lynchburg, Virginia, Monday night for a concert by the duo Johnny Swim, when he was escorted away by armed campus police. Now, the first thing we got to observe about this this university called Liberty is that they need armed campus police.
Mm-hmm.
Martin said he was photographed and told by Liberty, photographed, presumably against his will, and told by Liberty police that he'd be immediately arrested if he ever stepped foot on Liberty property again.
By Liberty police.
By Liberty police. I don't know if this is a town or if it's the universities have their own police. And frankly, right there, I am going to reach out and say that that's probably against the Constitution of the USA. But anyway, be that as it may, on Twitter and in his blog, Martin has been a frequent critic of Falwell and Trump, particularly Falwell's alignment with Steve Bannon. He was a Trump employee for some time. And the movement known as the alt-right, which includes white nationalist and white supremacist groups. In a lengthy statement, Liberty University said the university welcomes a peaceful debate. I want you to remember that. Peaceful debate. And that Martin was removed because officials believed he intended to hold an unauthorized event on campus. What, like a frat party or something? The statement said he did not follow protocols for campus events, that such events require advance notice and authorization, and that he was seeking publicity. Bad man. What a maggot, eh?
Seems like they gave it to him.
He's not a televangelist, but he... Yeah, really, it does seem. Earlier Monday evening, and here is the kicker. Now, you remember that he intended to hold an unauthorized event on campus. It was anything but a peaceful debate that Martin was removed for. Martin was removed before he did anything, not after he did anything. And here is the kicker, Michael. Earlier Monday evening, Martin had announced his intention to hold a prayer meeting the next morning on the Liberty campus.
Well, now, you can't do that at a Christian university.
It is just, this was too delicious not to put on the podcast, mate. So we have something called Liberty University. Liberty means freedom. And according to these people, they would say that the pilgrims came to this country for freedom of, you know, expression of religion. And they have armed police carting this bloke off and threatening him that he should never be on this property again for the simple promise of holding a prayer meeting. I guess this is Christianity at its best.
The thing that we always want to bring focus to, and I appreciate you mentioning that we're not bringing focus to the politics of this, but to the Christianity of it. Goodness gracious, regardless of which side this would have come down on is completely irrelevant to the gospel revolution. But the side that Christianity comes down on any subject it just seems to always be the wrong side of history, the wrong side of the issue, just the wrong side of things. The term liberty in the New Testament is means to be exempt from law.
Oh, man.
And so it's not biblical liberty that the university is based on, because they wouldn't need police if it was biblical, biblical liberty.
And this is how Christianity protects itself. Look, if you want to know how religion protects itself, it's by banning any possibility of dissent. Not just any dissent, but any possibility of future dissent. He was arrested for the possibility of a future event.
And the event being prayer, or arrested for the possibility of prayer.
I don't know if this man did it for publicity. It doesn't much matter.
He got it.
And Christianity gets another black eye. And for that, Liberty University gets this award, the Bonehead of the Day Award.
Bonehead of the Day.
Remember, if you're a registered Amazon user, then Amazon will donate to Mike Williams Ministries 0.5% of everything you buy from them. Nothing else will change for you, except that now you will be an active participant in the gospel revolution without spending one extra cent. Not one more red bean. It's not going to cost you anything. It's just a great idea. So go for it. If you're an Amazon user, go for it. Do not keep buying stuff on Amazon without at least making Amazon pay us for spreading the gospel.
Yeah. And that's Amazon Smile.
Yeah. And you'll be smiling when you do it, because we certainly are.
And once you put in AmazonSmile.com one time, each time that you try to type in Amazon, it will say, do you want to go to Amazon Smile? So even once you do it once, you don't have to remind yourself again. Amazon will remind you that you have a contribution set up to Mike Williams Ministries, and are you sure you want to make a purchase without doing that?
And every time you do say, yes, I'd like to go to Amazon Smile, a smile will form on your face to almost engulf your whole physio, and your heart will expand with love. And with confirmation that the gospel is the best thing that ever happened to man.
Yes. Well, your attempt to be as eloquent as Pep was a good try.
Oh, that's as close as I ever bloody get to Pep, mate. I tell you, I tell you who gets closer. Jackie,
oh, yes.
Barnard, Send us, please send us. I think I might have some of it, but after we drop the last website, I need your poultry. We want to put another poultry corner up there. And I've lost the jingle that I made. I've lost the clip that I made about the stealthy gospel. I need that again, so I've got to redo that. Any of you out there who are poets, artists, meme generators, we want to create a presence on our website for you to do whatever you want. So, and while I'm at it, any person who's listening to this podcast who wants to share their memories of the history of the gospel revolution, please do. I want to interview you, number one. So I want to put you to air. And number two, I want to put it down in a permanent record on our website. So please, anyone who wants to share anything about the history of the gospel revolution, let us know.
Mm-hmm. Gospel revolution.
Michael, we have reached that part of our podcast, unfortunately, where you get to talk more than I do.
Well, we'll see if that proves out to be the truth or not.
And this is part three of a four-part series on faith, prayer, and hope. Now, Mike, did we cover faith adequately last week, or are there some things that we need to go over?
I think we're going to have to do a little bit more. In fact, the thing that it's going to be difficult for us to do is to separate these three subjects exclusively per PowerCast. They are going to be intertwined because they are so inexorably tied together.
we really have tried to separate them, but it doesn't look like it's going to work. Yeah,
this issue of prayer, faith, and hope. We want to isolate what prayer, faith, and hope have done. We don't want to confuse that with what prayer, faith, and hope have become in our culture today and on this side of the cross. We have to look at the reality of prayer being fulfilled. Scriptural prayer, scriptural faith, and scriptural hope. What do the scriptures say about these things? And like I said, you're not going to be able to separate these. We're going to have to understand them by linking them together and by separating them also. We know that the scriptures have been fulfilled. So if there's a scriptural faith, a scriptural prayer, a scriptural subject called hope, we know these things have been fulfilled. We are not in any degree of hope the second coming. We are not living in any degree of prayer for the second coming. We're not believing for the second coming. We know the second coming came with the resurrection of Christ. When we take these things and we look at them as far as the fulfillment of these things, such as the book of Psalms, Jesus called the book of Psalms scripture, and he said that all of this was about him and that not one jot or tittle would pass from the law until all things were fulfilled of the Psalms and of the prophets also. We also know that the Lord's Prayer has been fulfilled. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Thy will be done in earth rather than on earth. I don't know exactly what the Greek says in that, but I know at the time it was a wonderful insight for me that it was in earth.
The Greek preposition is extremely clear. It is en, E-N, and it's in earth.
In earth, not on earth.
And the follow-up to that is that we have this treasure in earthen vessels.
We do. So the consistency of this, not only from the Lord's Prayer, but to Paul's revelation of that prayer being fulfilled. So the element of fulfilled prayer is very important for this subject. Faith. What has faith done? The faith of God. Not only does the term the faith of God really mean the faith of God where it says that, but it actually means that in the places where it says faith in God.
Uh-huh.
So contrary to what Christianity has tried to tell us, they tried to say all of these faith of gods were mistranslated. They just absolutely out and out lied to you. That's not true. The Greek does not support that view, nor that rendering of this. It supports the faith of God, not faith in God.
But the people who did the translating, it supports their theology.
Yes, it supports their theology for sure. And then hope, what is scriptural hope? And that is, as Paul stated, that in the predestination of all things, God created man subject to vanity and subjected us to hope.
How many sermons have you heard about that?
About the subjection of hope that man was placed in through what is called the fall?
Yeah, and he was created subject to vanity. How many sermons have you heard about that?
Oh, well, they don't talk about it. Goodness gracious, it is avoided.
Uh-huh.
Because it undermines the entire doctrine of the fall of man. That's we see it as a mistake, an unforeseen fallibility that God was taken by surprise about. And Don started driving this home to me years ago, and we had many conversations about it in person and long distance. There was never a contentious conversation about it that I remember, and this is something that I changed my mind about because the evidence was just, it was just too much there. It was, when I was willing to go and start doing my own research on the subject, that's what was very convincing for me.
Sometimes it takes a lot of CPR to change our filters because we have believed this for so long. This was inculcated into us. This was we absorbed this from babies under a pew. We absorbed this from Sunday school. Let's call it indoctrination. Every Sunday morning before church, more indoctrination. And we got this, and we just presumed that what we were told was true. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is the same thing, it seems to me.
The scriptural view of these things, we've just done touchstones of prayer, faith, and hope. I want to continue focusing in on the issue of hope. Let me say this about prayer, faith, and hope as a person who's been in the ministry now for well over 40 years. Folks, I've been called to pray, to believe, to hope for a lot of situations in my lifetime. As a pastor and as a minister, I've stood and prayed for people in the altars for hours. I've gone to people's homes. There's one that flashes back to me all the time, has ever since it happened, and this is while I was pastoring, so in the early 80s, no later than 83. We were called to the home of I'm not sure if they were members of the church or not, but we were called to this home. And I remember going into the door with one of the elders, and we heard crying, sobbing, pain coming from the bedroom. And we went in, and there was a lady sitting on the edge of her bed. She was in her early 50s, I would guess. And her back was out, and she was throwing up. And so she would try to get in a position to where that her back was not spasming. And if you ever had a really severe back spasm, you know that's extremely painful. But then she would get so nauseous, she would throw up, so she would be throwing herself forward involuntarily, throwing up, and then her back would seize up, and so we were there to pray for her. The overshadowing issue of this was that a few months before, they were at a picnic down by the river, and their daughter, who was old enough to drive her car, drove her car there, parked her car there, and suddenly went missing. And they've never found her. To this day, they've never found this girl. They had been several months into it. I asked her where her husband was, and she said, he's down doing what he does every day. He's walking the river, trying to find our daughter. And so the grief that was over the house, the unbelievable suffering, physical, and one problem causing the other one to be worse. And we're there to pray. And, I remember I did the best I could at praying and then walked out in the living room. And, it's a horrible thing when you walk out of a situation like that, knowing that nothing you prayed is going to make a difference whatsoever.
But didn't you have faith?
You know, by then I already knew as a pastor that it didn't make any difference how much I prayed, how much I believed, how much I exercised faith, or how much I had hope. Now, to this day, Don, if somebody asked me to come and pray with them, I would do it. If they asked me to believe with them, I would say, I'll do what you're doing. If they asked me to hope, I would do that. Now, if they asked me if I was persuaded that the prayer and the believing, the faith and the hope would make a difference in the outcome, I would say no.
You're sounding a lot like Patch Adams. And Patch Adams is, I think, an atheist. And if you haven't seen the movie Patch Adams, go and see it. Number one, it's Robin Williams, so it's going to be a good watch. Number two, it's a true story about a doctor in America who has gone to the trouble of making effective, successful healthcare free.
Right. Yes.
And so have a look at this. And in it, he says, even though I don't have the faith that people have, I will. Why should I not use their faith in their favor? Now, it's a fascinating concept.
Yeah.
The concept that you would love somebody enough to pray for them, as he calls it, a good Baptist prayer, for their daughter, 15-year-old, who came in dead from a car wreck, who came in to intensive care from a car wreck. And he says that he would do that. And I see in Patch Adams a man consumed with love.
Well, and that's what this is all about. You know, it is all about love. But love is also honest. And that's just the honesty of it. Now, I know that there's many people.
So you're saying you would pray with someone.
Absolutely.
But you're also saying that you wouldn't tell them, "Hey, I'm going to pray, but it ain't going to work." But you're going to pray with them and comfort them, as Jesus said, "Comfort the comfortless."
Yes.
And you're going to know that it has.
It's not going to make a difference in the outcome. Now here is
then. Some people would say, well, why bother praying?
Well, the thing of it is, even if it gives them a temporary comfort between that and the reality of what the outcome is, that's all right if it calms their mind a bit. And here's where we have to expand our thinking a little bit. You know, there's a lot of people around the world that are persuaded that certain things work, and it calms their mind. Bizarre things that we in our culture would never, ever think of. Voodoo-like things, if you will, that we would count of the devil. This gives people peace.
Wow.
You can watch documentaries from around the world, and these people will swear by these events and these exercises of superstition, of voodoo, of prayer, of faith and hope, as much as any Christian would on the face of planet Earth. Don, I think this is one of the reasons that the Baptists and many religions around the world, Christian denominations, resort to according to thy will, Lord. Thy will be done. But that's a whole different thy will be done than Jesus prayed.
Why would you pray that? I mean, if thy will's going to be done anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So if we just took the, you know, billion Baptist and affiliates that pray that way.
Biggest Protestant denomination in the world.
They basically negate prayer, faith, and hope altogether by that one statement.
If it be thy will, God.
Yes, if it is your will.
Please, Lord, save our mother from cancer. Save her from dying. Save my daddy from dying in the hospital, if it be thy will.
Yeah, exactly.
Please save my daughter from being hurt at school today. Why, if it be thy
if
will.
If it be thy will.
Why?
If not, just let her get beat up. You know?
Why would you bother? Why would you bother? As if my prayer is going to be stronger than God's will. And don't tell me that before the Lusitania or the Titanic set sail, that as they were singing on the wharf and putting streamers up to the boat from the boat, and they were holding the streamers, and as they were singing,
I'll be with you till we meet again. By his counsels guide I hold you. With his sheep securely.
That's a prayer.
Yeah. But don't tell me they didn't say, Lord, protect them if it be thy will.
Exactly.
If you don't know God's will, why would you bother praying against it?
Well, and that is the powerful thing about the gospel, is that we know that God's will has been fulfilled. We've just got to stop and consider these things instead of just continuing. Because to me, it's like putting a blindfold on and ignoring reality. And I don't want to do that in my life. And I don't want anyone that's in my life and people I love and care about to put a blindfold on and pretend. If the Word of Faith movement, if what it teaches about prayer and faith and hope, if it worked, we would all be Word of Faith people by now.
You think?
It don't work. And, but see, the reality of saying it don't work is to the opposite degree of being able to say it did work. We know that this worked. Something happened. Something very powerful happened. If you don't come to an understanding of what these things have accomplished, what we've been taught about what they are supposed to accomplish will turn you into an atheist. Unless you firmly stick with, according to thy will, O Lord. Now, if you stick firmly with that and just accept, well, sometimes it's God's will for a child to die in a fire. Sometimes it's God's will for war. Sometimes it's God's will to just let things happen and protect some, not protect others, do for some, not do for others. I can't abide that for myself, Don.
In Germany in the Second World War, you cannot possibly, with a straight face, tell me that there were not people in Germany praying for a victorious outcome, if it be thy will, O Lord.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me that at the same time there were not people in England praying for exactly the same outcome.
Yeah.
And of course we know that in America that people were praying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure about Japan, but I do know about Germany. And so the Allies win. What are we supposed to think about the German sincere, godly Baptists?
Well, we're not supposed to think.
Okay.
We're just not supposed to think. I think to continue.
That makes life easier. Now I don't have to worry about the rest of the show.
We really just aren't supposed to think. And that's a hard task for me, is to just park my thinking and not look at things for face value.
That has no face value, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah, there's no value even on its face, you know, for that. What we're going to begin to talk about now is the thing that has brought some consolation to me, and that is the issue of a building. How does things, did God build anything? And if he did, what tools did he use? I think those are reasonable questions.
Good stuff.
And if you go with Hebrews, and goodness gracious, if you go into the Old Testament, it talks about our walls being salvation and the gates praise. So there's very many. The building of the ark, the building of the temple, and the exactness of all of that. So building is in the creativity. The building is creativity itself.
So creation, building, I guess same thing.
Yes. Now, Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1, we're going to go 1 through 3. God, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in times past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. Christ was the means by which God made everything, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. So we not only get a concept of something being builded here, but something being accomplished and a rest after the job is done. Once something is completed, it is completed. Now, before I go into any more of this, let me also read Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 through 3 seems to really pick up on this. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. You see, faith is no longer faith anymore. In these passages, faith is now substance. It's the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen.
So the point you're making is that most Christian faith relies for its integrity on something that you're hoping will happen or with something you're believing will happen.
It's a futuristic thing, yes.
Okay.
And here, really all we have to do is see how the writer of Hebrews stated, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So it has become reality.
Something which is substantial?
Yes.
And something which is provable by evidence?
Yes, now it is provable by evidence. For by it, faith, the elders obtained a good report. Now, we went back through these chapters recently. Through faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that things that are seen were not made of things which do appear.
So the seen did not create the unseen. The unseen created the seen.
Exactly. It has changed from being the unseen to the seen. It is now a manifested substance. It is now evidence. There is technical evidence to the fact.
So it was insubstantial and unevidenced, and now it is substantial and evidenced.
It is indeed. So, Don, I think one of the issues here for me is that if, as we very adamantly declare from the Scriptures and the New Testament also, that we've already been given everything in Christ. We have this treasure in earthen vessels. There's so many places that we could cite, but I think people are familiar with these. Then if we've already been given everything, then what role does faith, prayer, and hope have in this environment that we now are in, or in this reality that we now exist? We've already got it all. That was a thing that Word of Faith movement taught me, that we've already got all these things. But I saw the contradiction in it even way back then. If we've already been given all these things, why are we asking? Why are we praying? Why are we believing?
Why is faith so important?
Why is it so important if we've already got it? And, of course, I remember explaining that myself. That was to bring these things out of us. It brings the healing out. It brings everything out. But I was aware that there were contradictions to these things, but I had no place to go.
Ah.
I was indeed carrying two thoughts at once and having no resolve to it.
You were, as our beloved James would say, double-minded.
Either that or, as Aristotle said, a very advanced thinker.
Oh, Aristotle versus James. I'll take Aristotle every time.
I choose Aristotle.
Mm-mm.
One of my favorite programs is Modern Marvels. One that I watched this week was them putting together a stadium, the largest stadium in the world. Don't ask me where. I don't remember those details. Therefore, they had to have the largest crane in the world to lift the top uttermost recesses of this stadium into place. They counterbalanced the crane, and all of this had to be done so precisely and so accurately. And, of course, all of these pieces were prefabricated. Suddenly, I'm getting a gospel picture here. I am seeing predestination. This entire stadium was put together before it ever came together. It was put together.
What do you mean?
Well, all of its parts, the huge seating, you know, they didn't pour every seat on the spot. These large sections of seating and walls and everything, the structure, the superstructure that holds it all up was done before anybody ever saw it. And
was that where it began?
Well, of course, it began in somebody's mind. It was transferred onto a computer. It went from there to the actual pieces being formed long before the stadium was ever formed.
So how many times was this created, so to speak?
Well, if you count all of them, the creation in the person's mind, the creation of it on paper or on graphics, and then the creation of it piece by piece, and then the creation of it putting it together. So I guess four times it was actually put together or created. Possibly more than that. Who knows?
But at least that.
Yeah. Yes, at least that many times. It's much like what the scriptures teaches about all of the issues of the gospel were completed in the mind of God before the creation of the world. The worlds were not the first things that God created. God created man and God as one is what he first created. But then the pieces had to be put together. The process had to be implemented throughout the ages. The precision of this covenant, the precision of this testament, the precision of it is, it's unquestionable. Then the other one that I saw that I remembered after watching this one was actually a tunnel that was drilled through the Alps, solid granite. So all of these things, you see the precision of a work happens before the work begins.
Well, I remember seeing a video about how the channel crossing between France and England.
Yes.
And when they meet in the middle, it's like, hello, how's your mom?
Exactly. That hello, how's your mom moment would never take place until after they got the drill bits out. Because the very thing that created the tunnel, the very thing that was used to create the stadium, once it is completed, is an obstacle. Think about that just a moment. It's an obstacle because if you left this huge crane in the middle of the floor of the stadium, there would be no place to play. And if you left the drill bits in the tunnel, there would be no tunnel. It would render it completely ineffective. It would be as though no work had been done at all. If you left the tools in place that created it, then the creation itself would not be realized. So now you have what you can see. And this thing just hit me, these tools. Well, we just read through Hebrews about how God, through faith, framed the worlds together. It was faith that brought about the entire work of redemption. Faith was the tools, the drills in the tunnel, which was the same size as the tunnel. The crane, which was huge, sitting in the middle of the stadium floor. Once this job was completed, these things become obsolete. They would have become a complete block to this thing ever being able to be in position. And that in itself would have made the tool obsolete. It would have rendered the creation ineffective, and the tool itself would be obsolete. We've got a good type and shadow here to try to get this point across. Now, where does prayer? Prayer is kind of like the thing that brought it all together in the mind, you know. Faith is the tools that puts it together. Hope, where does hope fit in this? Well, it's not in the builder and it's not in the machine. It's the people. Every person that's going to sit in the stadium is outside hoping for the outcome of this. When they announced they were going to build the tunnel, when the announcement came that the tunnel was going to be built or the tunnel through the Alps, guess what? The entire population was subjected to hope. So the same as the entire population was subjected in hope while God was making the plan and using the tools, the population of the world was subjected to hope, just like the people who would eventually use the tunnel. They had nothing but hope that the tunnel would be finished. They were subjected to hope. This is all played out really quite well in the book of Romans. You can see the tunnel being built. I can see the tunnel going through the Alps. I can see the largest stadium in the world being built from these verses. For I reckon, verse 18 of chapter 8 of Romans, for I reckon that the suffering of the present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us.
So there is a past and a future.
And there's a lot of suffering, a lot of work, a lot of pain. For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. We can place the issue of prayer, faith, and hope in the very same position as the stadium, the drill through the Alps. So when I see all of these things, I see the gospel. I see prayer, faith, and hope. I see the people who are outside waiting until this is completed. What is their role in this? Their role is to go in and enjoy it. Their role is to have the convenience of, to use this. They don't need to go in with drill into a place where a drill has already gone in and made the tunnel. Wouldn't that look ridiculous? So we see all of this excitement and the preparation for this, and we watch the angels get just as excited, way more excited about the hole in the Alps and the stadium, or the tunnel connecting France to England, any of these, quote, modern marvels. They were way more excited about something that was being accomplished and about to be accomplished. And it had been that way for many centuries before.
And all of this was drawn up in the imagination of the designer.
Exactly.
Carried out through the actions of the architect, who had it down on paper.
Mm-hmm. Followed the blueprint.
And remember, when the Israelis crossed Jordan, let me just remind you that God rolled the waters back to the city of Adam.
Mm-hmm.
There was a city then called Adam.
Yeah.
May I say it in English? Adam? He rolled the waters back to Adam.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was in his architectural...
The blueprint.
The designer designed, the architect architected,
yep.
Put it down on paper, made it happen in the types and shadows of the Old Testament, if you will, or the scriptures, as we call them, and then suddenly built the house, suddenly put it all together. Suddenly it was there at Calvary when all of the design of the first interpreter, or the first inventor of it, was matched up with the architect, Jesus, who made it happen.
Exactly.
And then carried out on Calvary.
Oh, yeah, it's an amazing picture.
So the house was not just a creation in the mind of the designer. It was carried out in the plan of the architect. And it was concluded when the new creation suddenly became the house.
Yep. We weren't a part of this. We are recipients of this. There was a people chosen to be a part of this entire plan, which was one of absolute intentional failure on their part on every count, was the plan. And but still, we were not a part of the plan. You'd say, well, there were people who were involved. Yes, they were. But the vast majority of people was sitting back listening, saying, oh, the tunnel's being built. The stadium's going up, you know, and there's some people in there working on it. But it wasn't us that was in there working on any of this, folks. We were not a part of anything. Paul said that Moses was faithful in his house in building everything the way that he did. But Jesus is much more the builder of this house. One thing I have concluded is that scriptural prayer, faith, and hope are nowhere near the equivalent of what we experience now on anybody's definition of those three subjects. Because prayer, faith, and hope did something powerful. They accomplished their job. And with prayer, faith, and hope now, and by any definition of any Christianity, is hardly better, if at all, better than a wish. And the tools that got the job done, in this case, were faith, hope, and prayer.
Can I get an amen?
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. Why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Michael, we're in a pledge drive.
Yes, we've just wrapped the pledge drive up as of this PowerCast, but we don't have the full record of it as of the recording of the PowerCast.
But next week?
Yes, we should be able to give that to you next week, and we want to thank everyone for all that they've done and to give us a successful outcome here. We appreciate it so much.
Remember, grace is not a theology. It is not a subject matter. It is not a doctrine. Mm-hmm. It's a person.
Yeah.
And his name is Jesus. Grace, God's Undeserving Favor by Barry Laney. Go buy it on Amazon today. Paperback, $10. Kindle edition, $3. Go get it. So now it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Mike Williams here in Palm Beach Gardens. Remember, folks, it may be quite a step to start living by the faith of the Son of God rather than living by your own faith, which you really don't have anyway. But it is a marvelous place to come to. It's called rest. It is called rest. We love you. Thank you for what you're doing. We'll keep doing what we're doing, and we'll all get this thing done in planet Earth.
And you know, yes, we will. And you know, if you are having to work at something, it ain't rest.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say it again. If you are having to work at something, it ain't rest. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we'll do the same thing all over again, only
better.
Been gone to church since I was a boy. Now I'm old and I'm low on joy. I feel tired. Is there something I missed? Or is it just that I'm a Methodist? I got the Methodist blues. Sit in the sanctuary Sunday morn. Minister talks about a being reborn. I got a load of guilt that I've been carrying. I wonder if I should have been Unitarian. The organ is soupy, the pastor is bland. I leave afterward and I shake his hand. Sometimes I like to shake my fist. That's what it's like to be Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. Lot of odd people sitting in the pews want the sermon to reflect their views. Some of these Christians, they are the rudest. Maybe I ought to try being Buddhist. Our people gossip about who did what. The ladies' circle is a pain in the butt. I wanna slap their face or at least their wrist, but I can't cause I am a Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. It's not easy being Methodist. Troubles, we got a whole long list. We're too rational, too Socratic. I wish we were charismatic. Same 10 people always volunteer. Half of them old and the others just weird. I am blue and I'm getting more bluish. Maybe Jewish. Everyone is afraid of change. Don't like anything new or strange. We get our underwear in a twist, and that's how it is with the Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. like John Wesley, not Chuck Berry or Elvis Presley. We're not so hip, but we persist. We go on being Methodist. We got the Methodist blues. When we die and go up in the air, St. Peter will hold out a diadem and say, shh, they're Baptists in there. They thought it would just be them. And if a Baptist you happen to meet, they may regard you as a foreigner. We got Catholics across the street and Muslims right around the corner. Oh, I got the Methodist